Good morning. Today is Monday, April 18th, 2016, and you are listening to KBOO FM. We are broadcasting 90.7 in Portland.
91.9 if you are in points east, such as Hood River, Oregon. If you are in point south, like the wonderful city of Philomath, or in the Willamette River Valley, that is 104.3, and in the ether, KBOO.FM. Today, as Cecil said, is April 18th, and it's a few days past the odds, but it's also tax day.
Tax day.
Yes. Mail them.
Mail them? People mail taxes? I mean, you have
the option to do them electronically. Oh. I just prefer not to. I like to mail mine. Some things I do old school because I can't. Like voting, you know. I would actually go in and cast my vote the day of. I told you. It's just the ritual of it.
The ritual. But that's another conversation.
Yes, another one.
But today we're pleased to have with us today winners of the 2016 Greenfield Peace Writing Scholarship. It is sponsored by the Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. Joining us are three winners and also Dr. Pat O'Haron, the board president of Oregon PSR. Maybe, Pat, we'll begin with you, and you can tell us something about the scholarship, its origin, and about the contest.
Yeah, thanks, Cecil. I'll start with just a few words about Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. We're an organization of health professionals and concerned individuals working collaboratively with community partners to educate and advocate for societal and policy change that protects human health at the local, state, national, and international levels. We seek a healthy, just, and peaceful world for present and future generations. Our current work involves bringing a scientific and public health perspective to issue areas like promoting peace and nuclear disarmament, ending nuclear power, protecting the climate, and protecting environmental health. We feel strongly, as did Del Greenfield, who was our first executive director, that engaging young people who are our next generation of leaders on these issues is important. So every year we hold a peace writing scholarship that has different questions. This year the question was, how would a successful movement to confront climate change help create a more just and peaceful world? And we send out a flyer to every high school. It's open to high schoolers, and we send one out to every high school in Oregon. And then we get quite a few entries, and then and today on the show we have our three winners. Can I mention our award ceremony really quick?
Yes.
I want to get a plug in for that. We're having an award ceremony on April 29th. It's at the First Unitarian Church on 1226 Southwest Salmon. It's from 6 to 8 p.m. It's free and it's open to the public. Our three the three students who are here today will be there and read their essays. And we also have Dar Jamal speaking. Can I introduce Dar really quick?
Or, oh, yes, please.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah, so Dar is a journalist who wrote for Truth Out for a while and currently is writing for Al Jazeera. He's also written several books, including Beyond the Green Zone, Dispatches from an Unembedded Journalist in Iraq, The Will to Resist, about soldiers who refuse to fight in Iraq and Afghanistan, and most recently in 2014, The Mass Destruction of Iraq.
Excellent. And again, that's at it's the award ceremony will take place on April 29th at the First Unitarian Church on 12th and Salmon in Portland. And in addition to having that award-winning journalist, Dar Jamal, you will also have the three people that we are so fortunate to have today, and certainly the focus. How would a successful movement to confront climate change help create a more just, peaceful world? And with us are all three of the winners, and we'll have them introduce themselves. Let me just share their name. Nitan Abivi from Beaverton High School, Caroline Friesen from Lincoln High School and Kayla McLaughlin for Westland High School. Nitan, how did you hear about this scholarship?
So I go to Beaverton High School, and we have a scholarship list on the website for the school. And one of the scholarships that was on the list was this scholarship. And I thought I could write an essay and hopefully receive it.
What made you interested in this particular scholarship? And I'm going to ask you all this question. Why ecology? Why organizing? Why the global climate?
I think climate change is one of the greatest issues we're facing today. I think the fact that it is not being viewed that way is dangerous to the future of the human race and to the future of the world as we know it. And I hope to be able to help change that by participating in this scholarship.
And Nitan, global change is mean just that, global change. And you were sharing with me earlier that you moved to the United States a couple of years ago. Tell us about where you were born. And
I was born in Israel. English is my second language. I lived in Israel up until the middle of my sophomore year. For the last 4 years that I lived in Israel, I lived close to the Gaza Strip, and I was under missile attack from Gaza. So this is a nice change.
I think that's an understatement. But
and so let's continue. Kaylor, how did you hear about this, and why did you think it's important to address this issue?
I heard about this. My environmental science teacher had posted a poster in our classroom about it, and I just saw it and I was like, oh, money for college. But then I read into it a little bit, and the issue is something that I think is also, I mean, it doesn't hit quite as close to home as it does for him, but for me it's just more of a that I really care about. And not only that, but it was two things that I really care about, because it was peace and it was climate change. And pulling those things together, and I mean, at first glance it's easy to say they don't go together, but when you think about it, it's like the connections between them are just endless and infinite and ignored and very important. So I was excited to write about it.
Okay.
And Caroline, did you just happen to come across it?
Or is this something? Have you been interested before?
Yeah, I actually heard about this from my geography teacher, Tim Swinehart, and every year he has his geography students answer the Greenfield Peace Scholarship question. So he made everyone in his geography classes actually write an answer to this question as our first semester final. So I wrote it, and being in geography class has really sort of opened my eyes to a lot of these issues that I wrote about in my essay. I'd always sort of been interested in climate change and peace movements in general. But being a part of that class and sort of having class discussions and being able to watch documentaries and read books sort of really opened my eyes to the ways in which peace and movements to combat climate change can be connected. So I was really excited to write about it and really excited to be one of the winners.
As a young person, when I hear you talk about climate change, when I hear you talk about peace movements, Your looking at climate change, I hope, is going to be a little different from mine. Not just because I'm older, not just because you right now have you have tools maybe that I didn't have in terms of organizing, but what is it about climate change that, as a young person, it makes you feel that it's very important? What is it that resonates for you and makes you want to be involved in it? Any of you, just jump in.
So I think that this is going to be our future. Climate change is going to have increased effect as time goes on. And so as we get older, we will feel it more and more. And I don't want to live in a world where I cannot, like, have parks around my house, or like that the area of forestry is much lower. And I think that's why it's important for us to work against climate change.
So you really feel it, you really think it. This is not something that is, for example, on television and not in your real life. You actually feel and experience and have some real day-to-day concerns about it.
Yeah, this is a very real issue, very urgent issue, and I hope to help make it obvious to more people.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the people in power, whether it be politicians or CEOs of companies, are older than us, and they're able to sort of, or we're able to sort of say, well, we have most of our lives ahead of us. We want to be able to live in a world where everyone is healthy and the climate is healthy and we can sort of have this sustainable future. And I think it's easier for those in power who are sort of trying to work against the movement to combat climate change to sort of forget that there's this whole new generation of people, and there's going to continue to be new generations of people that want to have a healthy planet. So I think that's important to me, to sort of have a future for myself or if I have them, and just sort of maintain that sustainable future instead of just sort of thinking about yourself and whether the planet is going to be healthy in your lifetime.
So do you think that whether or not the planet is going to be healthy in your lifetime and in your children's lifetime, do you get a sense of frustration or anger at older generation ignoring and even more creating this problem?
Or denying, which is different than ignoring.
Okay. For me, this issue is sort of personal because I have, in my world, at my school, in my environmental science classroom, whatever it be, it's really easy to look at the people around me and know that everyone behind me knows the science behind it, knows that it's happening, understands it, recognizes it is, and even is making an effort to, like, change it. But when I step out of that, when I talk to the older generations, my grandparents, love them to death, but, I can say something like, I told them I won this scholarship last week, and my grandma tells me, climate change isn't real, like just straight out. And it's just, it's frustrating, but it's also, I think, motivating. And, to look in the place that they were and in their time, and I can't say that I would have, I don't think I would have ever denied it, but do I know that I would have been able to stand up for it or, tried to understand it more? We had this harsh political history of course, the early 70s were a huge movement for the green movement or whatever, but after that it was put on lockdown in with Reagan and Bush 1 and Bush 2, and there was no fresh air, there was no focus on this, and it wasn't anything that anyone was like talking. They have there's all these lower level organizations, but no one at a high level was putting this on the platform, and no one was putting this first. And it's easy to blame politicians for this. Of course, we elect our politicians, but I don't know. I think our generation gets it. We have the opportunity to change it. There's a hole that's obviously been dug for us, and we have to get out of it. And, it's hard to remain hopeful when you hear about it or when you learn about it, but I think we have work to do, but we can do it.
And that was Kayla McLaughlin, who's a senior at Westland High School, and also joining us this morning are Caroline Friesen, is that correct?
Caroline Friesen, yeah.
Caroline, thank you. And also Nitan Abibi. Caroline is a student at Lincoln High School. Nitan is a student at Beaverton. And the three of them are winners of the Greenfield Peace Writing Scholarship, sponsored by the Oregon Physicians for Social Responsibility. They will receive their awards on April
28th.
Is that right? Yeah. I thought it was April.
I thought April 30th, but don't.
29th.
Don't, okay. We'll split the difference. There we go.
April 29th, 6 to 8 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 12th and Salmon.
Okay.
And they also have their essays with us, and they'll read it there, but we are lucky to have them here and give the first public reading of their essay. So we're going to give them a second to focus and breathe and get their good reading voice together.
And who would like to go first? Caroline?
All right, I'll go first. Okay. In today's political arena, climate change is often addressed as an issue entirely separate from issues such as national security. In fact, discussions about climate change are often put on the back burner when events that threaten national security occur. However, these two issues are inextricably linked. Climate change creates the conditions in many nations around the world for conflict, extremism, dictatorships, and oppression to occur, which are only further exacerbated by events our changing climate has brought us: floods, droughts, storms, and the depletion of resources. It is only by recognizing and understanding how closely tied these two issues are, and addressing these problems in tandem instead of separately, that we as a global community can attempt to achieve a more just and peaceful world. In recent months, Paris has become an example to the world on how to handle both the issues of terrorism and climate change. Following the attacks in France's capital in mid-November, many suspected the scheduled global climate talks would be postponed or even canceled. However, they proceeded as planned and an agreement was ultimately reached. All nations who participated in the talks pledged to lower CO2 emissions, and important steps were taken towards halting the effects of climate change. Worldwide, smaller grassroots movements have also been making large impacts on the progression towards a solution. In Sussex, Britain, a group of citizens came together to protest fracking in their community, and then helped start a new company that would provide energy in a more sustainable, renewable way. In Canada, the Beaver Lake Cree Nation stood up for their rights and called for the stop of tar sands drilling, which is eroding their homeland. These movements represent small successes on a global scale, but when combined, they have the potential to bring about real and significant change. Successful movements such as these give a voice to those who have been marginalized or unfairly targeted by large, power-hungry corporations, and by climate change itself. By giving people in third-world countries the resources to combat climate change, by taking responsibility for their contribution to our changing climate, and by doing their part to halt it, wealthy first-world countries can help to bring about a more just and equitable world. Taking responsibility for and recognizing the way in which colonialism on the part of first world countries has negatively impacted the ability of third world countries to respond to issues such as these is one important step that needs to be taken. A small success for this issue has already been achieved. At the Paris talks, leaders put in place a provision to set up a fund for third world countries such as these. By halting and reversing the effects of climate change, especially in countries that are being subjected to violence, oppression, and disaster, we can reverse the conditions that have led to these damaging conflicts. Extreme weather events could become fewer and farther in between, and increased levels of stability could be returned to countries and communities around the globe. By working hard and being dedicated to creating successful movements to combat climate change, we can bring about a more peaceful world. And by practicing empathy and understanding the worldwide struggle that people are facing due to climate change, a more just and peaceful world can become a tangible reality. As the Dalai Lama said, peace is not just the mere absence of violence. Peace is, I think, the manifestation of human compassion.
Thank you very much. That was Caroline Friesen, a student at Lincoln High School and a winner of the Oregon PSR Greenfield Peace Writing Scholarship. Kayla, would you like to read your essay?
Sure. Okay. I was 13 years old when my biology teacher recommended I read Aldo Leopold's The Sand County Almanac. It was my freshman year of high school, and I was just beginning to dig my teeth into ecology and the problems anthropogenic climate change causes. I was naive and young. I still am, to be fair. But this teacher, this single mentor, opened my eyes to a problem I had very little awareness of. He sat with me day after day as we spoke over a messy desk about water shortages, invasive species, veganism, biodiversity, and melting permafrost. I was 17 years old when I decided to become a vegetarian. This part of my identity quickly became an easy conversation starter. I loved the excuse it gave me to speak with others about the environment, about something real, about something that I care about. I loved the excuse it gave me to search out people who had recipes and dietary tips to share. I loved the excuse it gave me to talk. I was 18 years old when I started volunteering as a crew leader with the organization Friends of Trees. I'd done other work with groups like Solve and my city's Parks and Rec department, but this experience was different. One day I looked up from the envelope-sized hole I was pushing the roots of a snowberry shrub into and felt the world pause around me. The sun shone on my face and I watched as everyone around me laughed, boots ankle deep in mud, eyes fixated on a heron landing ridiculously in a western red cedar. The point I'm attempting to make is this. Other than certain physiological predispositions, there's only one thing that every human shares. It's our home, our planet, our Earth. It's the corridor that connects each of us to our neighbor, to our enemies, to a village 12,000 miles away. Every time I do my part to pursue a healthier planet, I connect with people in a raw, honest, beautiful way that I have a hard time comparing to almost anything else. In my volunteer work, I've seen an old Mormon bishop connect with a 24-year-old tattooed lesbian over the correct way to uproot ivy. But that was just the beginning. What started as a simple inquiry of technique quickly snowballed into a conversation about how both of them had seen Metallica live and preferred Italian food to everything else. I even saw the two strangers exchange phone numbers at day's end. If ecology can bring two people of completely different backgrounds together, I have no reason to believe it couldn't do the same for military enemies, international opponents, and people of different languages, races, religions, political opinions, etc. While it's important to consider the economic and socio-political equity, improvements in human health, and brighter future that combating climate change allows, the most important thing it lends us is an appreciation for one another. As climate change pulls our world apart, finding ways to fight it brings our species together. When we pick up trash, lab coats, and conversations, we're forced to set down guns, hate speech, and ignorance. We become natural and determined and full of love. When we chase environmental health, we aren't chasing peace, but it tends to find us anyway.
And that was Caleb McLaughlin, who was responding to the question, how would a successful movement to confront climate change to help create a more just and peaceful world? And finally, Nita.
Climate change is the greatest threat facing humanity today. A successful movement to stop these changes will allow all of us for a better life. As climate change progresses, we are seeing its consequences more clearly. As scientists warn us, the impact of climate change on wildlife is devastating. All through the natural world, animals and plants must face environmental conditions which they have never encountered before. Many of them cannot adapt quickly enough and go extinct. Even for those who do not understand the profound impact a mass extinction poses to the human race, climate change poses threats in the short term as well. Because of climate change, extreme weather, such as hurricanes and tornadoes, will become more frequent and more intense. This means more danger to people's property and to people's lives. The rising sea levels threaten the homes of billions of people, and already many people are forced to leave their now uninhabitable houses. A movement to confront climate change will help mitigate the impact of these issues on our lives and the lives of others. This kind of movement will have to be focused on helping those who suffer the effects of climate change the most. It will come from a willingness to sacrifice our short-term comfort in order to help confront the pressing issues which are destroying our planet. As such, this movement will help connect people. Because climate change is a global issue, interaction between people from all over the world will be required for the movement to succeed. Having to join forces with others will allow us to come together, all in the name of a cause which will better the lives of all people, fighting climate change. As this movement gains power, so will the connections built between people of different nations become stronger. This will help us fight racism and ethnic discrimination, great causes of injustice. With less prejudice, many people will live happier lives. Even though some claim that the economy will suffer from a successful movement for climate change, this is false. A movement for climate change will help create jobs. In 2009, the Union of Concerned Scientists conducted an analysis of the economic benefit of a 25% renewable energy standard by 2025. They found it would create three times as many jobs as an equivalent amount of electricity coming from fossil fuels. Climate change is by its very nature unjust. The harmful results of it affect us regardless of the extent to which we contributed to it. On top of that, the means with which we deal with these effects are not proportional to the effect they have on us. They depend on our country and our economic status. The pollution caused by factories in the United States contribute to climate change and might cause a drought in a society which depends on water for its crops. If we fight climate change, we can allow all people to enjoy our great planet instead of undermining its ability to support all of us in order to benefit the few. By fighting against this type of action, we will help bring justice to those who are hurt by these changes the most. If this kind of movement were successful, its values would be embedded into the ethos of many of us. The kind of selfless actions which will be required for this movement to succeed will become part of who we are. The view that the well-being of others is no less important than our own will become commonplace, making the world into a more just and peaceful place.
And that was Nitan Avivi, a student at Beaverton High School, reading his essay, award-winning essay, for the Greenfield Peace Writing Scholarship.
You are listening to More Talk Radio here on your Community Connection, KBOO, Portland. If you'd like to join in the conversation to speak to the young people about climate change, where they go from here, about even just the joy of being involved in something profound and bigger than themselves, you can do so by calling 503-231-8187. And we'll go to our first caller. Thanks for holding. Good morning, George.
Good morning. What a wonderful topic and how terrifically gripping it is. If a little bit terrifying, but it provides us with some real motivation to say, thank God we can at least now get some important reports from these young scholars who are doing something that just is so valuable. And I have a question. Over the last several generations, I'm an old guy, I noticed books every now and then claiming that our economy was becoming more and more dependent on the production of military goods. And this morning, I think earlier, I heard that some very large percentage of the money that is paid in income taxes to the federal government goes into paying for military expenses. And then that joined in my head with something I'd heard not too long ago, that our military is one of the largest producers of the consumers of petroleum fuels and one of the largest producers of the kinds of gases that cause climate change. And I wonder, have some of you heard this? And does this mean that war might possibly be one of the worst possible things to do in any situation because it involves not only our own military, maybe, but others?
Well, in all honesty, I kind of want to intercede here for our guests and say that's a little outside of the area that we're discussing today. And, you know, I think your conclusion kind of speaks for itself. You're right. War would be the fact that the military is involved in weapons of destruction, and it has fossil fuels that run some of these machines. It is a little frightening, but I think that's a little bit out of the realm of what our guests are handling.
So they may not have actually been looking into this or heard anything about it then?
Well, it's not part of the assignment.
So you're sort of saying that you don't want them to say anything on this?
Oh, no, I'm just prefacing their comments by saying this is outside of their assignment, and I'm about to turn it over to them.
Well, thank you so much. Well, I'll hang up and listen over the radio. Thanks again.
All right.
Thank you, George.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye. Okay, so one thing that I definitely hear a lot about is I mean, the U.S. is one of the highest military spenders, you know, and it's like you add the 10 below us together and it's still not anywhere close to how much money we're spending on it. And I'd consider myself a pacifist through and through. So if that were up to me, I would say, you know, just wipe that clean. But, you know, it's probably a good thing there's people on the other side of the spectrum, too. Yeah, I think there's a ton of connections between climate change and war, and petroleum may be one of them. And, you know, there's endless other ones to consider, you know, what kind of industrial waste these companies that are producing weapons are releasing, and, you know, just any number of things, you know. So definitely connected issues. Yeah.
Thank you, Kayla.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone else would like to comment, if not, we can go to our next caller.
Okay.
Well, I think that the issue is sort of related to peace. If you think, like Kayla was saying, how much the United States spends on the military, and then if you think about how much the military itself contributes to the issue of climate change, I think that it's definitely something that we, as a nation and as a world, really need to think about. Do we really need to be putting this much fossil fuel energy into our military? And I think that if we really think about that, we can both help make the world a more peaceful place by sort of limiting our military involvement in places where we're not needed, and also by limiting our contribution to climate change.
Excellent. Thank you. And we'll go to our next caller.
Good morning, John.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Hi. My name's John, and I'm actually in Caroline's class and at Lincoln High School, and we just wanted to say hi.
Hi.
And then secondly, we wanted to just ask what you three think you will be doing in the future, if anything, regarding this topic.
Thank you. Nitan, I cut you off earlier. You want to respond and maybe say something about the previous call?
Well, I just wanted to say that I think the fact that the U.S. spends such an disproportionate amount of wealth on war shows that it's not really to respond to the threat. It's more out of our fear. And I think if we slowly lower the budget and put more money into renewable energy or creating jobs in different ways, it will both increase peace and help combat climate change.
Okay, and to the last question about where do you see yourself going?
I don't really know what I will be doing in the future. One thing that I am thinking about doing is maybe become an educator, perhaps a professor at a university. And I think that would be one way in which I could help inform people about the subject of climate change, show the facts, show that it's not a hoax, and help create a movement such as similar to the one we have discussed in the essay, which will help combat climate change and bring peace.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
So
I think I'd like to, I'm sort of split paths right now, but I think I'd like to eventually get a degree in environmental science or ecology or something of that sort in order to be sort of a field ecologist. Maybe that's one thought, but in the immediate future, next year, I'm going for 3 months in the fall to the Philippines mm-hmm. to work on a mangrove restoration project and also teach locals about conservation biology. So pretty excited about that.
Thank you. Caroline.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure what I'd like to do in the future, but I plan on going to college next year and majoring in political science, hopefully. So I think that I definitely want to sort of be thinking about climate change and the ways in which I can contribute to the movement in my adult life. And so I think that I'm really interested in going into government, maybe not necessarily being a politician, but working for policymakers and sort of working in an area where I could try to get politicians really passionate about climate change and sort of really try to push policy decisions towards making things like fracking illegal and sort of making the way in which we run our country more sustainable and more climate friendly.
I don't want to scare you, but I believe that position is called a lobbyist.
I'm not sure I want to be a lobbyist, yeah. But...
Well, I mean, sometimes that is exactly what it takes.
Yeah, I think that environmental lobbyists are definitely doing good work, so...
So I have a couple of hard questions here to ask. How many of you know whether or not organizations you're involved in are heavily invested or invested in fossil fuels? Have you taken the time to check and see if you're part of any organization? Because sometimes you start your advocacy close to home. Now, you don't have to, if you don't know, it's okay. Because you're going to be asked lots of questions in this life that you don't know. But, you know, one of the reasons I ask is how many of you listened to the news about the summit that was held in Paris recently? And you listened to the some of the activists who were actually your age. Do you know that there were people your age from the Marshall Islands who came to speak? And how passionate they were. Are any of you familiar with what's going on in the Marshall Islands? Okay, let me tell you something that I want you to do a little research on, because I think it will bring this a lot closer to home. Because from now, here in the United States, probably because we're on the West Coast, the most you know about it would be the fact that we had a very mild winter. Okay, that's pretty much how we've experienced it. If you were in the Northeast, you probably had some unusual nor'easters. If you were in the part south, you've hit some hurricanes out of season. But if you lived in the Marshall Islands and you were a person your age, you would be fearful because you would see your island sinking. You'd see the water rising. You've heard of that? Mm-hmm. Okay, so when I listened to, now, Tyler, was it you that said you were going to the Philippines? Mm-hmm. Okay, when I listened to you say that, I was wondering, have you noticed what kinds of climate change issues that they're dealing with there, and what are some of the things that you hope to be involved with?
So the project that I'm really working on is just, I mean, I just made this decision, so I'm getting there with the knowledge.
Okay,
about
and
it,
that's but, okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The project I'm working on is with mangroves, because that's it's one of their, you know, it's like the local rainforest in the Philippines is the mm-hmm. mangrove forest. It's the, you know, center of the ecological biodiversity of the islands. And so, you know, mangroves are water-based trees. So as water level rises, it won't affect them and it won't affect them. And then it will affect them.
And then it will.
And then it will mm-hmm. affect, you know, every animal that lives in them and every person that banks on them or some.
Well, it'll affect us and the animals before it affects the trees.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's one of the ways to bring it home. But in addition to looking at what kinds of investments organizations you're involved in have, connect with some of the young people who live in some of these areas, because I think that will help refocus and give you a broader perspective. I listened to some of the young people speak who were from the Marshall Islands, and they were experiencing the loss of land right here and now. It's not something that their grandparents were talking about. Like me, I'm worried about my grandkids. You know, are they going to have a world? But when you talk to the young people who are the same age as you, and they're actually battling it from a more urgent perspective, I think it helps broaden your awareness.
Yeah, and I think it's really important to listen to those perspectives, because I think here in Portland, really in any sort of developed place, it's really easy for us to be out of touch with nature. And I really liked what Kayla was talking about in her essay about sort of being in touch with the environment and sort mm-hmm. of really thinking about that. And I think that it's really easy for us to not really notice the effects of climate change. We say, oh, well, you know, it wasn't as cold this winter, or, you know, it snowed a lot in New York this winter or something like that. But it's not really impacting the way we live our lives yet. But places like the Marshall Islands, where the sea levels are rising, those people, their lives are being impacted right now by climate change. And I think if we're able to bring in those conversations and bring in those kinds of perspectives, that's something that's really important towards raising awareness.
One of the things, as Celeste mentioned, in terms of dialoguing with people who are different, I think, Kaylor, you mentioned earlier in conversations you had with different people, people close to you, and you mentioned a relative who did not believe that climate
yeah.
change was a fact. How do you engage in conversation with people with differences or of no opinion? How do we bridge those gaps?
So for me, I mean, directly in my life with my grandparents, et cetera, and engaging in a talk about climate change or honestly any type of like social equality issues or anything, you know, my grandparents are really on the opposite side of the political spectrum for me. But, you know, they do when so they're trying to pull me as well as I'm trying to pull them, you know. So but I find that their ways of interacting are like all caps locks emails and like scary like scary articles from unreliable sources and things like that, and I'm just kind of brush them off. So when I interact with them, I try to just make it more of a like through how I am kind of thing and not through what I'm saying. And so with my actions and with the things I choose to take part in and with how I mean just being compassionate to them, even I mean me yelling at them about climate change really isn't going to get either of us anywhere. It's probably just going to push us both off further. But I think it's really important to just be compassionate and, you know, lead with your actions.
Have you shown them any of the videos where you've got the polar bears standing on shrinking icebergs? Or that, you know, when you talked about, now who was it that talked about the permafrost that was?
I mentioned that, yeah.
Okay. Now, I spent a lot of time in Alaska, and the last time I went, I was on a ride from Anchorage up to Fairbanks, and I've taken that ride before, and I remember thinking, I don't remember the highway doing a lot of this dipping. Mm-hmm. And so I was asking the driver, what's going on? I said, I'm pretty sure you all didn't design the road this way. Why didn't you grade it better? And, you know, grading basically is making it one pretty even level surface. And the driver said, oh, no, you're right, we didn't. He said, that's because the permafrost is melting.
That's crazy.
Now, people really need to see that. And so maybe sometimes you don't need to do the speaking. You show your parents and your family members some of the news, some of the video. The imagery is what will speak, I think, a lot better mm-hmm. and louder than any word ever can. And sometimes just seeing that is what makes a difference, and you might be able to sway them or at least convince them it's not a hoax.
Yeah.
Nitan, before we go to our next one.
I think, kind of like Kaylor said, with speak with your actions. I don't remember who it was that said, be the change you want to see. I think we should all, whenever we were discussing any topic, we should keep an open mind about whether we're right or wrong about it. And I think showing like the overwhelming scientific approval, I guess, to the idea that climate change is man-made and is real should change people's minds. I understand that it doesn't always translate to reality. But I think we should all, whenever we're discussing any topic, should keep an open mind and try and convince with facts and bring, show your arguments and bring evidence that supports it.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
We have a couple of more callers. Before we go to them, let me remind you that you are listening to KBOO FM. This is More Talk Radio. With my co-host Celeste Carey, I am Cecil Prescott. We're speaking with winners of the 2016 Greenfield Peace Writing Scholarship, which is sponsored by the Oregon's Physicians for Social Responsibility. The award ceremony will take place on April 29th
mm-hmm.
at the First Unitarian Church in Portland, 12th and Salmon, and begins at 6 p.m.
Yep.
6 to 8. Let's go to Nick Kohler.
Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. I got a comment and a question.
Okay.
Okay, my first comment is that Native Americans already put forth a model for the environment. And I think that when Native Americans had this country and everything environmentally was good, they were a nomadic people. They moved around. Now, when capitalism came into play, all the land now is privatized. And because of that privatization, now you got all of this erosion and all of this climate problem. So that's the first question. I mean, comment. Now, my next question is, why not start dealing with climate change from a social perspective. I mean, why go to the environment? Why not be concerned about society and all the problems that is going on from a societal point of view in terms of homelessness, mass incarceration, illiteracy, Indians dying at 35 on Indian reservations, animals in zoos getting better health care than people. Why not deal with that climate change first?
Okay.
Talk to you later.
Okay, thank you, Michael. There's a multiple of issues, and they may be interrelated.
Right.
How do you respond to Michael's question? Caroline?
Yeah, well, I absolutely think that it's really important to think about the social side of climate change and think about how climate change has had such a large impact on social issues like the ones you mentioned. And I think it's important to sort of think about the social side and the environmental side at the same time, because I don't really think that you can separate them. Climate change has had environmental effects when it comes to rising sea waters and permafrost melting. And then at the same time, it's had these sort of really damaging social effects that a lot of times people don't think about. So I think if we're really going to try to address climate change, we need to think about all of the ways in which it has impacted the world in which we live.
Thank you.
I think one of the reasons that I try to put more of my energy into learning about climate change as an issue is because in the grand scheme, it's solving climate change is what is going to give us the opportunity to solve other issues, right? Because if we don't focus on climate change, then, you know, all these other issues occur and we don't get to deal with them because we don't have a planet left or, you know. And also, I think not focusing on climate change just sends all these other issues and all this political instability into it snowballs and it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And I think that climate change is really... focusing on that is really what gives us a chance to stop that.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't really have much to add. Climate change creates social issues, and they are intertwined. And by solving climate change, we will help solve some of the social issues. And by working we will need to work with other people in order to solve these issues, which again brings us to the social aspect.
Exactly. And let's go to our next caller. Evan, good morning.
Good morning, Evan.
Hi there. I had a question that is relevant to all the young listeners of the show. What can young people who may not have a lot of political power do to make a change in their society or their community regarding this topic?
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I think... I personally will not be able to vote in the next elections, though I really want to. but I try and work towards... I try and work towards the social change I want to see by convincing other people of the importance of these issues, whether it be... climate change or raising minimum wage or other things, which I think are important. I think a lot of people don't have faith in the political process, and I try and convince people of the importance of voting and the importance of caring about the issues. And just in my personal life in general, I try and help work towards these goals.
You know, as a young person, you can also go with some folks and make sure they get registered to vote. just say, let's go.
Kayla, what do young people do?
I think the number one thing that young people can do that we often overlook is just educate ourselves. Just learn about it. Just read the news. And, you know, none of us do that. And read the news and, you know, pick up a textbook. Just... Do something. Learn about it. And then the second thing is get out there. Go, if you care about environmental change, volunteer. There's 100 organizations that would love to have your help and would love to have a young person. And get your hands in the mud and, you know, go count salamanders or something. Get out there. There's a lot to do.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'm a big believer in young people sort of being involved, and that's sort of the way I try to live my life. I know that sounds kind of cheesy, but I think that really there's precious little that young people can do that adult or young people can't do that adults can do other than voting. Really, sort of, we have sort of the same ability to incite change. I think oftentimes when words come out of our mouths, when we're educated, it can have a much greater impact than adults sometimes, because I think a lot of times the things we say sort of come from a place of more truth. And and so I think that it's really important for, like Kayla said, to be involved in organizations, volunteer any way you can, speak up, go to protests, go to marches, just sort of try to educate the people around you and sort of make it a conversation and make it something that people need to talk about.
And reading your all of your biographies, you all and all are involved in different issues. And I just noticed in your biography, Carolyn, you're involved in an organization that help with immigration classes, on citizen classes for immigrants. So
yeah, I'm involved in an organization called Mission Citizen, which was founded 6 years ago by students at Lincoln, and it's completely student run. And though that issue isn't directly linked to climate change, I think sort of that same idea, just sort of being involved, we educate immigrants in ways to pass their citizenship test. And so I think sort of in that same vein, taking initiative, not sort of waiting for someone to come up to you and say, hey, do you want to be involved in this? That's fine. But also just sort of taking initiative and say, this is something that's really important. This is something I want to pursue and something I want to support.
Great. We're running short of time, but I want to let Pat to get in to answer that question and summarize the program and anything else you want to say.
Yeah, I wanted to dovetail on what Caroline said and sort of speak to the caller's premise that young people don't have a lot of political power, because I don't think that's true. It's understandable why people feel powerless in this society. In a representative democracy, there is kind of a firewall between the people and the decisions, but we have so many different things we can do. And voting is just the start of it. You know, we can get involved in political campaigns. You know, in a few years, all of you could even run for office. You know, you can, like you said, march. You can redress your grievances with your, you know, with elected officials on all levels. And that includes writing them, emailing them, calling them, showing up in their office. There's so many ways in which we can be politically active. You can join organizations. And especially since Physicians for Social Responsibility is a citizen activist organization, regardless of what you do in your lives, your bright futures can involve being active regardless of whether your job is directly dealing with climate change or social problems. You can be involved in things you care about in really meaningful ways.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Yes.
This has been a really exciting program, and it helps me to remain hopeful for the future. Briefly, share us your plans for next year. You might have mentioned it. Have you decided
college.
On colleges yet? Nitan, where will you be going?
I will probably be going to U of O. I don't know what I will be studying exactly. I'm interested in politics and education and climate change and music and comedy. So
excellent.
I'm sure there's an intersection there and people will listen. Yes.
And Kayla, you're going to the Philippines for 3 months before beginning university?
Yeah, I'll be going to Oregon State University Honors College in the winter.
Okay.
You know, what's really interesting about that is you will have a chance to learn more from them. So keep your ears and eyes open, because a lot of the indigenous cultures have succeeded all these centuries, and I think they have a lot to offer.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And Caroline?
I haven't totally decided yet, but...
You're juggling between two colleges?
Yeah, I am. I'll either be going to Occidental College or George Washington University next year, and I'm hoping to double major in Spanish and either international relations or political science.
All right.
So we'll see.
Que bueno. Well, this has been More Talk Radio, and we've had a chance to converse and dream with three young people who are focused on a climate change, and not just in terms of our weather, but in terms of a political climate change. We hope that you will come to the presentation, which is April 29th, 6 o'clock, and the address and location.
1226 Southwest Salmon, First Unitarian Church. And it is free and open to the public. Donations accepted.
Yes, indeed. This is More Talk Radio on your community connection, KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for the Old Mo Variety Hour with news, views, reviews, previews. Oh, just all kinds of things just for you. Information to keep you connected to your community.